welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. Are you ready to hear about Mr. Jingles? Because ostensibly that's what this episode is about. I'm trying to remember when it starts becoming about Mr. You know what? We'll get there. Maybe. I'm joined as always by Ms. Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey, what's good?
Hello. Yeah, for a second I was like, weird way to open this episode because he's really not in it. And then I remembered that's the literal title of the episode.
The title.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, wait. Yeah, that is weird that that's the title of the episode. And he's like barely in the episode at all. Yeah. Also, he doesn't get like backstory in this episode. So it's not like this is the episode where we learn about Mr. Jingles' troubled past. It's not. Like, he's just in a scene.
I just wanted to play on the playground.
I just loved keys. I just loved keys. They were my favorite
thing. I loved keys. And also Vietnamese ears, I guess?
Yeah.
It's unclear what point that was trying to make.
And also, like,
we gotta support the troops, but not all the time.
they did this thing, because, like, that's a really common thing, and, like, especially, like, in schlocky horror, which I'm not gonna knock. I like schlocky horror, but, like, that's a thing in schlocky horror of like, oh, we gave our killer like a specific thing that he does. Like, he likes keys. But they gave Mr. Jingles two things of he likes keys and also he steals ears. And I'm like, those two things are like not even in the same ballpark of like a characteristic.
That's the problem, right? Yeah, like one of those is like, okay, this guy is like a violent bounty hunting kind of guy who wants to have trophies. And the other one is he's a baby.
He's a parakeet, yeah. So,
yeah, not really like hyper compatible traits to have. Like, yeah, this guy was like a soldier in Vietnam and he was too fucked up, so they sent him back. And not like fucked up like from the war, like he was into it.
Yeah, he was like, too into it.
He was having too much fun. And it was weirding everyone out. Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. And sometimes, like, I think I said this in one of our previous episodes. Like, they went to Vietnam and came back a little fucked up because they liked killing too much is like not even unique to this specific series.
Right.
That's
yeah.
Something from Texas Chainsaw 2. That's literally one of the characters' backstories. That's why he wasn't in the first one. Is he was in Vietnam, and he comes back all fucked
up.
That's
not even unique to Vietnam. That
yeah.
Like goes back to like Romance of the Three Fucking Kingdoms.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's not. I like have bits and pieces that I remember of stuff we learn about Mr. Jingles later, not in this episode, but like later in the series. And I don't think they ever give us like a good reason for like one of his two characteristics, and I won't say which one it is. but we will, I guess, get
I mean,
there when we get there.
If it's not the keys, I'm gonna go fucking crazy. Because, like, the ears is just like, yeah, sure, they forget that. They just wanted him to be violent. But if they, like, don't explain the keys, that's insane. That's crazy.
I mean, that's his name. His name isn't Mr. Ears. That's Mr. Jingles. So,
right,
like,
yeah,
that's more important, I would say. I would say the jingling is more important.
I could also see it being creepier if it weren't for the name, which kind of, like, undercuts it and makes it, you know what I mean? Like, it's, like, one of those ambient things. But, like, they pull attention to it, so it's not going to work, you know, no matter
it
what.
It makes him sound like a funny toy phone.
Right.
Like, it's not, like, they really skinkamarinked him, but, like, backwards. Like, they turned him into the damn phone.
Yeah. Like, not to, like, Mr. Bye-Bye Man, the situation, but, like, I've written a lot of internet horror. It was actually how I got my start making content. So I've done a lot of writing internet horror. And one of the things that is paramount when writing horror, period, is like, it's hard to explain, but there's nuance to writing, especially when it's like a villain or a monster or something. Giving it a name, especially a monster or like a serial killer, a name that's vague enough that you get people hooked, like, oh, I want to know more about that. But also, like, it
explains
a little bit. Yeah, isn't Mr. Jingles, isn't silly. So, like, if it was me and I was on this writing staff and they were insistent that this character had to have both of these characteristics for some reason, I would name him Mr. Keys instead of Mr. Jingles, because that could potentially go somewhere. Because instead of just it being like, oh, they call him Mr. Jingles because he makes a jingling noise when he fucking is coming, you could be like,
Mr.
Oh.
Key Ring or something. Yeah, there's so many ways you could make it, like, scarier. Like, I was thinking the most like used serial killer name of all time and like one of the first ones to take off in the paper, Jack the Ripper.
Great
example of what you said. Like it gets you interested. Like it's just a guy, but he fucking rips people.
He's
apparently
doing a rip.
Whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah.
He's gonna let it rip. That's no good. He's not playing Beyblades. Those yet. Enough that, but like you get that it's scary. It's not like you wouldn't meet Jack the Ripper and be like, what's he gonna do? Rip my keys? Like,
yeah.
What's kind of funny is that like they have a serial killer with a better name in this than Richard Ramirez the Night Stalker, except they stole it from real life, you know?
Yeah.
Which like just undercuts how bad a name it is. Like, whoops, yeah, no, it's no good.
Which, to be fair, this is me being a hater to Richard Ramirez, which I feel like we all should be.
I'm not a stan. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying,
To be fair, I don't think he named himself, because that's lame. You can't give yourself a nickname. Not that he was cool, but, like, you can't give yourself a nickname.
Right.
But, like, Night Stalker feels a bit, like, on the nose.
he's the guy who
stalks at night. It is cooler than Mr. Jingles, though.
That's what I'm getting at, though. The bar is in hell with Mr. Jingles, to the point where Night Stalker is like, all right, I can fuck with Night Stalker.
What was the serial killer in Season 5's name? I forgot. The main character. What was his name? They gave him a name.
The Ten Commandments killer.
The Ten Commandments killer. And his whole deal was the Ten Commandments. It was the most on-the-nose thing. That would be like if they named Jigsaw from Saw, like, the
Trap Setter.
Yeah. This is Traps McGee.
Mr. Devices, yeah.
Mr. Devices, Mr. Plans.
Oh, they call him Johnny Gadgets, you know? Like, oh, no.
naming a murdering monster just the Trapper. That's so ridiculous.
I almost said the Trapper, and then I was like, no, Dead by Daylight can't catch a stray here.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I'm in the wings to always make Dead by Daylight catch a stray.
True. Yeah. Dead by Daylight loves giving killers names like the Dream Demon and the Shape. Oh, wait, no, that's what they're called in their movies. I'm being handed a note.
The Shape owns. Yeah. I love the Shape. That's such a good name for it. We can't get into Mike Myers right now.
I always want to talk about Michael Myers. I'm sorry. I will derail any conversation to talk about my beautiful boy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's perfect. So... speaking of boys who are not perfect, last time we left off the show with Montana trying to make a move on Brooke, which, like, sure, whatever, man, and Brooke running out of the room. And then we cut to the fellas in a shower, and are you ready for some dialogue of men in a shower that would never happen? So they say who is it who asked? I think they're just already discussing it when it cuts to him.
It's
they're discussing,
Ray,
like,
I think.
What sense they would give up. Yeah, like of your five senses or whatever, what would you give up? Ray says smell. And truly, that's like the most reasonable answer,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Like, literally, my friend Emily Astor, just lacks that sense. She's just never had a sense of smell ever. She just like lacks some part of olfactory that has not really that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Gotta be honest. Of all the people I know who have like lost a sense, that's gotta be the least impactful one. Because like. You can know her for, like, 10 years, and it just doesn't come up.
I feel like, and I'm not dissing the show here, it's just like, I almost feel like the better way to ask that question is if you had to lose one sense, and don't say smell. You know what I mean? Like, because it's almost like a gimme, you know?
Or present it like an either-or. Would you rather lose your sight or your hearing? Like, something like that. So there's actually some stakes. Because, like, if you ask it like this, it's like, well, obviously. I think they are, I promise I'm not trying to glaze American Horror Story. To their credit,
I think we know, yeah.
I think they're trying to make the guys look stupider here. Like, oh, guys are so dumb, having a dumb guy conversation.
That's fair.
Because, like, they are going to get stupider. This conversation is going to get stupider. Literally every sentence that goes on, it's going to get stupider.
Yeah. Right. So immediately after Ray goes, yeah, probably smell. That feels like the least impactful of them. Chet goes, you never smell bacon again, though. Which, to which I'd say, like, okay.
Yeah.
that's fine. There, yeah. Like, not, honestly, bacon, like, do I like the smell of bacon? Yeah, absolutely. Is it in my top 20 smells? Probably not.
Well, that's also, like, it's not gonna be like, ah, good point. Sight. You know what I mean? Like, no one's doing that. Get out of here.
Blind. I'd like to never hear music again or ever hear anything or be able to drive because I can't hear or see. Yeah, you're right. And, like, touch. People do undersell touch because the first thing I thought was people are going to say taste and touch. And I'm like, well, taste would suck. Like, taste would objectively suck more than smell. Granted, your taste is going to take a hit if your smell goes, but, like, you're not going to lose all of it. Now, touch, big problem. You do not want to not have touch. Touch is kind of a big deal.
It's like a condition. And every time it comes up, it's like seriously a pain in the ass. Because like part of the thing you don't realize about sensing pain is, like, for example, when you sleep, your body will subconsciously, like, get itself out of positions that are harming it.
Right.
Not so much. All the little times you kind of, like, dink into something and maybe don't notice it. What if that was you broke your toe instead? Because that's pretty common. People with that condition a lot of times will just, like, have a cut on them that they just do not notice, or, like, they'll be bruised in some way, especially a kid who has it, right? So you, like, have to, like, check them every night and be like, okay, did you get a big ass bruise on you somewhere and not fucking notice? So like, touch is, even just on, like, a survival level, it's, like, pretty damn important.
I feel like there's a lot of qualifications. You do have to make this, like, an interesting kind of would you rather question, right? Because it is pretty much like smell, maybe taste next, then, you know, and then you're kind of, like, fighting over, like, maybe sight and, like, touch and, you know, all that and hear, you know, that kind
of
thing.
The sixth sense.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to be able to see ghosts anymore. I am ready.
Make me like Daredevil from Marvel. Make it so that I can only see ghosts or whatever his deal is or something like that. Yeah,
that's what it was. You got it. So after that, we go to Trevor, who Trevor's the, like, older guy, right? He's the high school girls stay at the same age guy. It's really hard to keep track of which of these fuckers is which. But he goes, Montana's skin smells like vanilla frosting, which immediately everyone else in the room should have been like, what?
Regardless, like, of how old he is, what do you mean? He is the most important takeaway is he's not part of the group of friends. He's an outsider. He's a new guy that they just met. Him and Brooke are, like, new additions to this group. And I don't know, like, I'm not a guy, but, like, if I was a guy and a dude who I just met, who seems to be significantly older than me and my friends, was like, oh my god, your friend smells like vanilla frosting, I'd probably be like, you can't talk to her anymore, actually.
Yeah, right?
I've decided.
Yeah.
Very, very weird at best. And at worst, for me, too, it would come off as like, oh, okay, I get it. You're, like, really insecure.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You just need to brag immediately about, like, oh, I've been intimate. Like, all right, man, no one fucking asked.
I've had sex. I've had so much sex. I do sex all the time with my massive penis. This character also will never stop talking about his massive penis, but to his credit, neither does anybody else. So everybody will be talking about this guy's massive hog in about 30
minutes. None of you are free from sin in the American Horror Story world.
But. Yeah. So after this, Trevor starts going on about how Montana might be his soulmate, which, see, this is the part, Liz, where I'd be like, you can't talk to her anymore, man. Like, oh, you know that girl I just met, like, a day ago?
Not even a day, an hour ago. It's been literally, like, an hour.
Unbelievable. And then he goes like, oh, first base was great. And then one of them follows up with, oh, it is, so you just kissed? And then they explain that the base system has never been good or meant anything because it's too vague. And
okay, but Trevor's is a little out of pocket. Trevor's first base is out of pocket based on the generally accepted base system. I agree with Jet.
Yeah, basket weaving underwater, and by that I mean eating pussy, is like definitely past first base. Like,
right, yeah.
Mouth on genitals, that's past first base. There's can all agree, yes. Yeah.
Like, then what the like, what's even between home at that point, really?
Yeah, I was going to say, we call that being in the dugout where I come from.
Oh, hitting one into the batter's eye, baby.
Call him when a pop fly. Yeah. Oh,
Lord in heaven. So then Ray immediately goes, if Trevor gets dibs on Montana, I get first shot at Brooke, which, like, immediately I'd be like, so we're just doing that, they're just property immediately. Great. Yeah. Just cutting out the middle man, just no bullshit, just these women are objects to us. Great. Good to have that up front.
But also, they're like all friends, they've been friends for a while. I'm like, why is this the turning point that you're like, oh, now that we're in a secluded, is this an Always Sunny in Philadelphia situation? Like, is it because you're in the woods and there's like limited options now? They're like, well, now my friend has to fuck me because we're in the woods, so now, like, we're divvying them up. Brooke is a new addition. We just got her yesterday, so, like, was it just going to be like, well, guess we're all going to have to rock, paper, scissors over Montana. Sure hope she doesn't try to, like, fuck the nurse or something. That would be awkward for all of us. Yeah, it's very strange. Which is also weird that Ray is immediately like, well, I'm going to get first shot at Brooke then. Because Chet has, like, made it very obvious from the moment, like, these characters were introduced that, like, he's very interested in Brooke. And instead of Chet being like, bro, what the fuck? Like, you know I like her. He's like, wait, who does that leave for me? Chet McOlympics, man. And I'm like, are you dumb? Well, yes. The answer's yes. But, like, what do you mean? Like, who does that leave for me?
It doesn't feel like very in character for him, too, because he's supposed to be, like, this weird jock guy. Like, look at how hot I am, and, like, fucking Olympics, and here's my ass, you know, and just be like, what?
His one-note characteristic is roid rage.
Yeah.
As written. Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I don't know, guys. Like, no, you can't be the nerd. Like, you can't be the loser guy we root for. Get out of here with that, you know? But they're trying.
No. Yeah. He was supposed to go to the Olympics. But Xavier has maybe the only funny response, which is he's like, I don't really give a shit who you get, Chet. Nobody gets to go after my girl, Chef Birdie. She is my soulmate. And I just want you guys to know, if I remember correctly, this, like, little bit will go on for the rest of the series, I think. But I think it has, like, a funny payoff.
Good.
Yeah, so I think that this is good, and we can put our small, teeny tiny little bit of optimism in this running bit of, like, this big burly Chef Birdie and pretty boy Xavier weirdly flirting with each other. If I remember correctly, it has a funny payoff, or at least, like, an amusing payoff. Now it's time to talk about that guy's hog, I guess.
So they get in the shower. Inexplicably, one of them forgot a towel, which seems like the one item you wouldn't.
Right.
Then there's a cut. I forgot this happened because it doesn't make sense. Brooke's just outside, and it cuts to Margaret just slamming the electricity off to the whole camp with the big comedic "all the electricity to the whole camp" switch.
It's like in the middle. Yes. That's like out, by the way. It's like outside where anybody could flip it at any time. Like, say, I don't know, maybe a camper who was getting up to no good. Like, potentially, like, you know, to play a little hee-haw prank. Maybe you wouldn't want to have the... In the same way that Asylum probably didn't want to have a let all of the people out button on the wall, we probably don't want a turn all of the electricity to the camp off switch in the middle of the camp.
Right.
Yeah. Because, like, if you leave a 7-year-old around a switch or button, there's, like, a 90% chance it's getting interacted with in, like, under an hour.
They'll make a game out of that. That's no question there, you know.
But, yeah.
Yeah. That's, like,
especially if they know. First. Like, yeah. if they know it turns off the electricity, it's GG. It's game over. Like, you're going to be playing. I don't know if anyone's listening has ever been to a convention. A grown adult at every fire convention alarm. Cannot stop themselves from pulling the fire alarm. They cannot. Siren song and the fire alarm cannot be withstood by a grown adult.
You've either turned it new, I dare you to pull the switch so we can see what it does, or I dare you to shut off all the power. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work. It's a bad idea, but c'est la vie.
Thank you for turning off the power.
Children are easy to override good ideas with peer pressure is what we're getting at.
Right.
they'll know it's the bad idea, but peer pressure just wins.
Yeah. So the power's off.
Power's gone. Xavier, as he's walking back, gets speared, gets full on just slams him out of nowhere and then like throws him into the back of a car. This comes out of nowhere, by the way. This is like unbelievable levels of out of nowhere, which considering he's putting him in a car and like a big car from the 80s, the kind that you can hear from like a block away. Pretty unbelievable, especially considering there's no electricity going on, so it would be like dead silent in the camp. Regardless, though, throws Xavier in the back, and Xavier just responds with, "What the hell, Blake?" And it's an older man who says, "That name is reserved for business associates and acquaintances. My boys never call me that." And then Xavier just looks back and goes, "Fine, daddy." And it's like, oh, man. Okay. I get you're trying to build this up as like a weird relationship. Here's the thing. If this was like a longer running, more impactful thing, I might give more of a shit. Spoilers. This dude dies in like 6 minutes. Like, they're setting up this fucking guy. Like, it's going to be this super long back and forth with Xavier and like a constant threat. But this guy's just going to pop like a balloon. he's gone in no time.
To my relief, he will die. I forgot that he dies like so quickly after being introduced. So when Xavier was like, "Fine, daddy," I was like, there's no way I can handle multiple episodes of this dynamic. Right. And then he died, and I was
time
like,
to eat my own head.
Thank God. Thank God this guy's dead.
So yeah, essentially Blake hands him a cigarette and then Xavier's like, "Hey man, you shouldn't call people over the phone and threaten to stalk them or whatever," which I don't know if that's ever, I don't think Xavier was ever the person who picked up the phone when those threats happened, was
he? No, he was talking about, remember how when they were on their way up here, he checked his messages at the payphone, he called his answering machine and that guy was "You can't just take your big dick and get out of town," or whatever. That was on his answering machine. That was the payoff for this is the payoff for that, I guess. That was him that called him. It was Blake that called him.
So Blake is here to give a bunch of backstory to Xavier very quickly. Namely that Xavier was in a park on drugs, you know, homeless, having a bad time, etc. And then Blake scooped him up and decided to clean him. Yeah, get clean, he says, except they're still doing drugs, which means he didn't get, like, he got physically clean. Like, there's not as much dirt on him. But,
right.
Like,
but, yeah.
He's still doing cocaine.
Yeah.
Cocaine and weed, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, just kind of gives him this whole, like, spiel of, like, "I made you. I'm the reason you're here today. How dare you eschew my care and desires? And you're as dumb as you are pretty, which is awesome because you're really pretty, but also you're really fucking dumb. By the way, you set up your forwarding address from the studio you usually get paychecks to the camp, which is even more confusing, because like, how long are you gonna be at this camp that you need them to forward your work check?
Also, how are you getting work checks?
To send the checks for a couple weeks. Yeah, wait, what? Yeah, what
work checks are you getting? You're working at a camp now, like, what are you talking about? I think they confuse, like, very frequently. This is like a very specific thing I've noticed, and it's just little micro things like this that I've noticed, where sometimes there will be writing in this show where, like, a certain profession will be, like, mentioned, or like a character will have a profession, and it becomes very obvious that the writers of this show, or maybe the showrunners in particular, think every job is like working on a TV show, and they don't know how other jobs work, because I think what they're thinking of is like residuals, but you wouldn't get residuals for working at a jazzercise studio.
right I feel like that comes up every now and again with anything that's not doing like to do with making a show. Like, they get like stuff about parenting wrong, we've like pointed out, or like in this case, like there's a lot of camp stuff that just doesn't work. Like, they don't seem to have much experience with life, really.
Yeah.
Which is odd, but yeah.
They've been making the show since they were like children, I guess, and this is the only thing, this is the only life they've ever known.
Well, you don't give a shit about it, like anything, it all looks like a nail, I guess, is how the expression
goes. Oh, true, but, yeah.
Right, you know, but
that's how that saying goes, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So Blake then decides to pull his leverage and go, I have a porno tape. And Xavier just like cries and is like, no, you said there was no more pormo. I'm not gay. And Blake just immediately goes, gay for pay, baby. Which like, that's, this isn't really how this like exchange works. It's usually someone would be like, oh, I saw you in a thing, and then you would explain you were, it's wild. Wild having it be this direction.
It's also the second time the show's brought that up, which I find odd. You remember
gay
like
for pay?
Six,
yeah,
that,
yeah, it says
like,
it.
The one guy needed an Uber ride. Yeah. You ever heard of gay for, which is like, what? Like,
they keep saying it. They keep making characters say it. It's really weird.
It's like you can't. It's like they're trying to make it a thing, like fetch or whatever, you know?
Well,
just
it's like
no.
Big hog thing. I was going to mention it a second ago, but I was figured we'd wait until like the big hog thing came up. But like, this is not the first time they've been like, what if one of the characters had a massive schlong and all the other characters couldn't stop talking about it? They did that shit, I think, in Asylum. Like, one of the it was Freak Show. It was like Esmeralda's like quote unquote business partner, the gay guy who was also evil. And tried to like, fuck the Thor guy.
Stanley?
Yeah, Stanley.
Yeah, that's right. What the
fuck? I forgot that Stanley was like, also, my cock is huge.
Yeah,
like,
I got a big schlong. Yeah.
Well, I'm not shocked because it figured into nothing. Like, it was just such a weird thing. You know?
They just made him bring it up. They were like, make sure Stanley tells the camera how big his hog is.
Do you know, so this is a quick aside. You know, The Godfather, the book, Sonny Corleone has a huge schlong as well. The author, Mario Puzo, decides to point that out. And you know what? They cut it out of the movie. You know why?
Oh, no.
Doesn't need to fucking be there in any context. It doesn't help your fiction. Really, you know?
You'd be surprised. Unfortunately, I went on a rant about this the other day on stream. If you've ever read any Stephen King fiction, he cannot stop himself from describing penises in his books. He cannot physically. It's like he has a witch's curse.
Nice.
He loves describing penises in his books. You cannot escape it.
So we got to stop because this is how this podcast started, is you and I have like some horror media that we know we can go a rant about. And the minute you mentioned, if you've read some Stephen King, and I'm like, you just opened up the vault, my friend, you know, but like, we got to stick to one thing at a time. But
Stephen King loves describing cocks. Yeah, he does. God, he does.
That flowery sword of Shannara prose, but only for dicks. Oh, God, I get it. Another two paragraphs about how green this pasture is. Fucking move on.
Thanks, Stephen King. Gay for pay.
Yeah, it's gay for pay. And is that Xavier says, like, I'm trying to be a real actor, and I gotta leave this behind. And immediately the other feller, Blake, is like, oh, well, I'm gonna make you a star in Pormo. And it clearly Blake's not into it. Xavier gets ready to leave. Blake then just like knocks him on the ground and goes, "You're gonna do what Daddy says, or I'm gonna send that tape to all your friends, his drunk mother, and the dance studio." Which, yeah, I don't think anyone on that list would particularly give a shit. Like, I think maybe the like the Olympics guy who seems a little macho over the top might be like a little teasing, but I don't know, man. If he was just like, "Yeah, I used to be a heroin addict, and like that's how I kind of got back on my feet," it'd be like, "Oh shit, okay, man." Like, I don't know. It doesn't feel really bullyable.
Yeah, like these characters, like specifically this group, has like made a pretty big point of being like, "We are for the sexual revolution and like sexual freedom." Like, they don't really strike me as the type of group that would be like, "Oh, you're gay, gross." Like, I think they'd probably be fine. Like, I think they'd be like, they might tease him that he did porn, but like, I don't think they'd like be like, "We can't be friends with you anymore."
Chet would be like, "This is why you give up touch, you see, because then it won't matter, right?" And they're like, "No, Chet, that's stupid. You're an idiot. Get out of here." You know? But
I just hate that he calls himself daddy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We all hate that.
Yeah. So Xavier then goes, "You know what? What if I could find a guy with a bigger dick than me? I know a guy with a... I just met... You're not going to believe this. I just met a guy with a bigger dick than me. You want to see?" And Blake's like, "Yeah, okay. Yeah, I would like to see. Thanks for asking."
Show me.
Yeah, he says, "Show me." I'm like...
Just like, yeah. Like Morpheus in The Matrix, like, "I know Kung Fu, show me." Or it's like, "I can find a guy with a bigger dick, I want to see. Let's go."
I want to know how Xavier knows, because it's not like he's, like, it's not like Trevor has, like, shown them his dick yet, and Xavier left the showers before, like, the guys were in the showers. So, like, was he just like, "I bet that guy would do porn," if given the opportunity? Because my thing was... The first thing Xavier says is he's like, "I have someone better than me." He doesn't say exactly what it was. And I started immediately typing out a note where I was like, he has to be talking about Trevor because there's no way he's going to like tell his friends what's going on. And I'm like, you are smoking crack if you think that Blake is going to look at Trevor and be like, "Yeah, that guy's just as pretty as you are." But then he's like, "He has a huge dick." And I'm like, okay, that makes... more sense, I guess. Just a weird thing to like throw another guy under the bus for having a huge hog, especially because this guy's a real, he shouldn't know.
Blake's a real, real one issue voter. This Blake, let me tell you.
Yeah, he's like, so, Xavier's pretty, but that guy, massive hog.
So there's some licensed music. I'll be real. It was so unimpressive that it fully has already lost me what the song was. In the shower, Trevor complains about his dick being too big, saying like, "Oh, I couldn't be in a Jane Fonda video because you could see my dick through the latex too good," or something.
You know, the song is that Jeopardy song, like "Our Love's in Jeopardy," right? Which is like, I don't know, like, it's like not a, that's not like White Wedding from before where you're like, "Oh, the 80s get it." It's like, I guess it's a song in the 80s. So yeah, I don't know why it's in there. But anyway.
I'm just guessing all of these songs are from the 80s. I'm not even like fact checking them. I'm just like, yeah, that sounds like it's from the 80s. And I guess they got like a bundle deal on like every 80s song ever. So they're just going to put them all in the show indiscriminately. They frame it like it's a video game cutscene because it starts with like a shot of the radio on the ground in the dark, and then the song starts playing from it, and then it like pans over to the boys in the shower. And I'm like, we don't really do this in American Horror Story. Like, is this gonna be an important thing? Is this like a Chekhov's radio situation? No, they just like wanted to be artsy for a second, I guess. They wanted to make an actual like TV show for a moment that wasn't just shot reverse shot. I suppose they do that sometimes in this show where they're like, "Oh yeah, we could just make like a TV show, like a normal one," and we could put some effort in it, and then the things that they put effort in have no payoff usually, like this. Yeah, they're complaining. Well, Trevor's complaining about his dick being too big and losing his job up in the Jane Fonda video. And he's like, "And most girls can't handle it." And I'm like, if this show was smarter they could, like, actually have him, like, be serious about that. Because that's, like, a common thing that women will say. Like, well, if it's too big, it kind of sucks for us. And if they had it be, like, him, like, getting serious for a second and being like, no, guys, you don't understand. Like, I have intimacy issues because every woman I'm with, like, I can't be intimate with because my dick is too big. It's, like, a real problem. It could be, like, maybe funny, I guess.
I have gigantism, honestly. It's, like, terrible, really, you know. You've never heard of it because it's not out yet, but there's a game called Fear and Hunger. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've got a elephantitis of the hog.
Right.
It's a real problem. They call me the elephant man, positive.
Elephantitis of the hog. I'm pretty sure that's a Magic the Gathering card.
So Trevor then starts asking him, what's everyone do for work? Ray explains again that he's an orderly at a hospital. And immediately after, Chet's like, finally, my one thing where I shit on my friend's totally reasonable profession. And so he does that. He immediately goes, all you do is wipe drool off of brain dead corpses. To which Ray is like, hey, man, they're people. Don't call them corpses. Which, yeah, okay, good. Good to see you have the note here of how many comatose people are in this hospital that your full-time job is caring to the comatose victims. Like, that's like a World of Horror thing. Is there like a ghost in the vent sucking everyone off? Like, you gotta be careful. Yeah, there's that many comatose people in one building. I'm like concerned.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't like know the average amount, but I don't feel like it's like more than three at any given time in most hospitals. Like, I don't feel like there's a lot of comatose people in hospitals at any given point.
Even three, I feel like, has got to be stretching it, right? It's like, that's not even, like, a common, like, HouseMD plot where shit like that happens all the time. You know what I mean? It's like, it feels like, like, three maximum. Like, and you'd be like, holy shit, that's that hospital with, like, three coma patients? What the hell? You know?
Yeah, like, it would be like a mystery trying to figure out why they were all in a coma. And then Dr. House would come in and be like, it's lupus.
It's not a coma, you idiots. And it would go on for another hour. But anyway, yeah.
But they're not corpses.
And then he'd take drugs, and everyone would be like, no, it's okay. He needs them.
this helps him. Trust me, I think.
Yes,
we're the doctors. Vicodin, why?
The Vicodin makes him smarter.
Defies all medical logic.
And he can say a slur
logic,
if he wants to. He's Dr. House. If he wants to say a slur every a once in a while, he can.
This dude can be...
It's a medical slur. It's for healing.
HR is just like, we don't even deal with him. We can't.
He doesn't even work here, if we're being honest. He hasn't worked here for 20 years.
Yeah, but he's so good.
So we cut to someone peeping through the wall. It's Blake, and he immediately is overselling this cock to no degree. Like, he's like, yeah, wow, that thing's an act of God. It's unbelievable. That's got to be the craziest dick I've ever seen in my life. Which, like, I don't know, man. Is it like a duck corkscrew? Like, I don't know what could be that crazy about it.
Like, I spent a good solid, like, 3 or 4 minutes trying to decide what size a dick would need to be for me to consider it act of God size. And the only sizes I could come up with in my mind would be, like, a medical condition for sure. Like, a medical condition that, like, would, like, impede his life almost all the time.
Also, like, he even mentions that it's, like, so big it's, like, a problem a lot of times, to which I would say, I don't think that's an act of God. I think there's an optimal hog, and that's not, you gone past.
Real Goldilocks and the Three Bears situation. This hog is too big.
That dick is too hot.
Yeah.
So as Blake cannot stop looking at that hog through the peephole, Xavier, upon realizing he has hypnotized him like a chicken by drawing a line on the ground, he just walks away. And Blake's like, yeah, okay. As Xavier walks away, like, within such a short period of time that it would be played as comedy on Benny Hill. Like, before he finishes walking away, it's like to the point where Blake, like, is watching for a bit and then is like, whoa, you getting a load of this hog? And behind him is Mr. Jangles instead of Xavier. and he just gets stabbed through the back of the head, like fully nailed to the wall.
And no one hears this, by the way. None of the boys in the shower hear this, even though it's like happening a foot away from them, 2 feet away from them, and it's a metal pole going through a metal wall and a man's head. They do not hear this. I guess the implication is, because the show is fucking stupid, I guess the implication is that, like, the radio is making it so that they don't hear this happening. But there's realistically no way that they wouldn't hear this happening. And spoiler alert for, like, 5 minutes later in the TV show, later the boys will discover Blake, but like he's at the back of the building. So like, I don't know why they wouldn't have heard this, but also would have like investigated behind the shower complex. It's very weird. They just are like, well, they would naturally want to, investigate their surroundings after showering, but they don't explain it. It's really annoying. They also do this weird shot, like, again, I cannot overstate how much of this specific season is so dark that you can't tell what's going on ever. But when he gets stabbed through the back of the head, like, it shows the apparatus that goes through his head. Like, it shows the pointed tip of it as, like, a whole shot that it lingers on for, like, 2 whole seconds. And typically, in most filmmaking or, like, TV show making, you would only do that if, like, you wanted the audience to pay attention to it and it was relevant and it was information you would want, like, to maybe call back to and have the audience be like, oh, yeah, that was that thing. We saw so-and-so grab that earlier or something like that. But A, it's Dick. So fucking dark that you can't tell what it is. And B, it's not relevant at all. It's just like it's just a metal pole or something. Like, yeah. It's literally not important. But we made a shot for it. That's what I always think about when I watch stuff like this and, like, I see scenes like that, is I think about it from a filmmaking perspective. Right. Of, like, you had to set up a camera. You had to roll film, which it's not like you can just, like, do that. Like, while doing the other scenes, they're not like, okay, we'll record the part where Xavier's talking to Blake and then have the cameraman run around to the other side of the wall and zoom in really quickly where Blake's head was. Like, you have to set up 2 totally different scenes for this. It was time and money that was used for this.
Yeah, to use, like, more modern terminology, I think the way it whiffs is it's, like, it's a lot of failed aura farming. It's a lot of, like, trying to make a scene that looks really fucking cool, but it doesn't look really fucking cool, and also it doesn't serve a purpose. So it's just a real, real whiff and a half. And I think that, yeah, I think this kill is one of them. Like, to the point that people will talk about, like, the different kills in, like, slasher films and stuff, and how well they were done and so forth. And this is just a real fucking stinker.
Yeah, and it also, it doesn't even feel like, the thing about it is, this is yet again, we're only 2 fucking episodes into this, and this episode in particular, this is now the second character where, like, a death happens and I don't care, and they keep, like, whiffing on making us care about the characters and then killing them. Because, like, Blake, like you said, seemed like he was going to be an ongoing problem, and he put, like, a little tiny bit of pressure on Xavier, and then, like, as soon as he did, he's already dead. Kind of like the psychiatrist who's, like, hunting down Mr. Jingles. She did one
thing and then died.
Like, there's no stakes. Like, I don't care that these characters died. If anything, I'm, like, mad. I'm like, well, you could have really, like, you could have milked the Blake thing, because now you have Xavier trying to, like, juggle this while also, like, all this other stuff's happening. But no, he's already dead.
If nothing else, too, he could be a character that you're, like, rooting for to get killed. You know what I mean? Which is, like, usually in horror, like, movies like this, they, like, kind of, like, give you a little bit on that because you want it to happen, but if they give it to you right away, then it's... But, like, Blake's not even here long enough that you can really hate him, you know? He's just sort
of,
like, wow.
Or feel relieved. You can't even, like, feel relieved on Xavier's behalf because it lasted, like, literally a minute and a half. He showed up, was like, you're gonna have to make the porns for daddy, and then he died. So, like...
Or, like... There's like so much potential. Like, you can have scenes where he could have saved Blake but chose not to, and then he has like kind of guilty, you know, in that way, sort of, you know what I mean? Like, you have a lot of like you can do and other better like works have done
instead of a comedy of errors, which is what it is here, where he like walks out of one Scooby-Doo door and then through another Scooby-Doo door is the killer.
The killer he didn't know about.
So it's time for Brooke to have no sense of self-preservation to a truly unreal degree. Brooke, who just to make sure everyone is keeping track, there are two serial killers hunting her down right now. I wouldn't even say she's convinced that. I think she knows, because like it did happen. Like, all of these things did happen to her. So she decided, you know what? I'm going to go to the one place where you truly cannot get away if someone approaches you from behind. I'm going to walk really far out on a pier in the middle of a spooky dark lake. So if someone comes up from behind me, I'm fucking hosed. And you know what she does? That exactly. And you know what? You wouldn't believe it. She looks down and there's a dead body, and it's so fucking dark that I could not tell you whose body it was.
Okay.
I think it's supposed to be the psychiatrist, but like I also cannot say one way or the other.
I have a literal screen cap of it in front of me right now, and I still don't know who it is. But the way that it's framed, because it is immediately after that other scene, like, we've already buried the lead and said, like, oh, the boys are gonna, like, find the body. But, like, the show doesn't present it that way. It's like, oh, Blake is dead. And then it cuts to Brooke, like, being on the pier and then seeing this, like, really hard to see dead body, like, hit her feet. And so, like, the implication based on context clues is that that would be Blake, who was just tossed in the lake by whoever killed him, and she has seen him. But we're going to find out in a minute, and we won't find out to the end of the episode, but, like, this information that this is not, in fact, Blake is going to be insanely confusing. Because if you'll remember, if we are assuming that this is, in fact, the psychiatrist, who fucking else would it be? Because it's not Blake. We know it's not Blake. Spoiler alert, we know it's not Blake. It has to be the psychiatrist. We just can't see her very well, which means Mr. Jingles killed this lady and then threw her in the lake, and she is hanging out here. And then this next thing is going to happen, which just so happens to be completely fucking coincidentally timed. Just completely fucking coincidentally timed. Not at all related. Because the way it is set up is like, I don't know if the people listening have ever seen, like, Freddy versus Jason. There's a lot of scenes that happen at the lake towards the end of the film, including said title characters popping out of the water a lot.
if you have not seen it too, Cabin in the Woods also has this toward the end, which is like the it's the pier that goes out into the lake, and it's all dark, and it's like kind of the, you know, where you have like you're being cornered by the killer kind of thing, you know? Yeah.
But remember, there's two of them, and wouldn't you know it after.
okay, wait. I just want to clarify, though, real quick. The body that floats up to her that she discovers in the lake, we agree, has to be the one killed by Mr. Jingles, right?
Yeah, that's what I just said. Is like, it has to be Mr. Jingles' kill. So the thing that happens next, a wild coincidence. Just completely a wild coincidence that, like, has no correlation to each other. Brooke's just the most unlucky person in the entire world, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, she sees the spooky body, screams, as you do, and then turns around, and sure enough, here's Richard Ramirez. It's me. I'm here. What are you yelling about? You haven't even seen me yet.
what does he think she's screaming about? Because, like, that's not the body he killed. That's not one of his victims.
Yeah.
So, like, what does he think she's screaming about? I think he's probably pretty confused in this scene. He's probably like, oh, damn, she just felt my aura, I guess. She got so scared because she could feel my aura coming that Or she can smell him.
She smelled me.
Yeah, she
smelled me. Was afraid of the smell. That's right. Last time I smelled something this stinky.
Satan's throwing me all sorts of curveballs tonight. Jeez, what's the matter, lady? But
me and my best friend Satan. Fuck, this is... There's a part of me that wishes they wrote him funny on purpose, because he's going to say some real out-of-pocket shit. He's already saying real out-of-pocket shit. By the end of this episode, which we're not even going to probably get to today, he's going to say some extremely out-of-pocket shit that only the writers could have made him say. There's no way he's on record saying this in real life. There's no way.
Right.
And if they would have written him as funny, that way he was the butt of the joke, it still wouldn't be good, but, like, it would be less offensive.
Or just make him not Richard Ramirez.
Yeah, I was going to say,
make him a different guy.
Exactly. Yeah. That works so much easier, too. Don't make life hard on yourselves. Like, you're not that good. You know, work up to
it. They could name him Richard Slamirez, and he also wears a lucha mask when he does it.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
There you go.
Night Stalker,
not stalker like he stalks, but like he stalks shelves at night at like a grocery store.
And you know what? Not to spoiler, just to tantalize you, there's another great reason that's going to happen that they could have fictionalized this character and should have, but whatever.
Should have. I would go as far as to say should have, definitely. Absolutely should have.
Like, it's wild that they kept this decision. We'll get there. Anyway, so... Yeah.
Brooke reasonably goes, hey, how did you find me anyway? And he goes, I told you. Satan showed me. Duh. And that's it. That's all you get to know. Satan told him. Shut up. No more questions.
Yeah, the real-life Richard Ramirez could just, like, locate people like a bat thanks to, I guess, his dad Satan. I don't know. Wait, no, I'm being handed a note. That was last season's character.
Wrong season, yeah.
You can't retcon someone's powers if they existed in real life. Like, it's not doesn't work. It's not Omni-Man. Like, goddamn it. Like, what the...
And much like Omni-Man, anyhow, for the rest of this season, he will be barefoot. Oh wait, no, never mind.
Well, are you ready? Are you ready for Brooke to have a Miyamoto Musashi awakening? Inexplicably? Because he decides to take a swing at her with a knife and whiffs. She falls down. He goes to stab her as she's on the ground and whiffs so bad that the knife gets stuck in the dock, which, like, wow, brother, have some control. Brooke stands up and sees a wooden oar. And in that moment, her inner Miyamoto Musashi awakens and she donks him in the head with a fucking oar. Richard Ramirez sucks so bad in this show. He's just, like, not threatening. Like, he fucks up and is easy to beat.
Yeah.
In so many ways.
He's attacked this little tiny, like, maybe 21-year-old girl twice and has gotten his ass beat both times. He has gotten his ass beat by this, like, 95-pound soaking wet 20-year-old girl.
And he has initiative, and she has no preparation.
And a
weapon. She's just standing there.
Yeah.
And he has a knife.
And Satan, allegedly. He also has Satan. Maybe Satan thinks this is funny. Maybe Satan's like, I love to see this guy get fucked with. That's why I told him where she was. I love seeing him get his ass beat, and I knew she's my girl. She's going to beat his ass. I hate this guy. God, I wish that was the plot. Yeah, I so badly wish it was the plot. Are you guys ready for the show to take its first very confusing turn? Because I thought this plot twist came later, but no, we get it right now. And it's going to... Oh, you guys thought we were safe from this plot in this season, but we're not.
It's ghosts, motherfucker. There's ghosts here, too. Mm-hmm. It doesn't end.
Ghost
There's
rules.
Always ghosts.
Ghost rules. Ghost rules. Ghost rules. Ghost rules.
Brooke takes off, and Richard Ramirez is chasing her through the woods. And Richard Ramirez gets full-on spear-tackled again, second one of the episode, by the hiker, Jonas, the guy who we saw stabbed and hung up on the door. Me immediately thinking, well, they aren't going to fuck up continuity that bad, so this guy has to be a ghost. And thankfully, they did not fuck up the continuity that bad. That also does mean I now have to accept, God damn it, we're doing ghosts again.
Yeah.
to which I will say, say, God damn it, we're doing ghosts again.
I thought we were doing a normal season. You know what I mean? Like, you said we were doing a normal season, American Horror Story. You lied, but yeah.
I forgot about it, too, until he showed up and spear-tackled Richard Ramirez, and I was like, God fucking damn it. I forgot we did ghosts in this fucking season. Yeah, and Jonas, by the way, we don't learn his name is Jonas until the end of the episode, but I'm not just going to call him the hiker because that sounds too cool.
Yeah.
Jonas is like, wait a second, no, I don't die here. And then Richard Ramirez disembowels him. So this is going to be, I'm just going to get ahead of it right now. This is going to start a bunch of very confusing ghost rules already. You might be thinking, oh, is it hotel ghost rules? No. Is it American Horror Story Season 1 ghost rules? No. Is it asylum ghost rules? No. This guy is simultaneously fully aware that he's a ghost and also doesn't know he's a ghost at the same time. It's really confusing for us, the audience, because the very first thing out of his mouth to tell us, the audience, that, oh, don't worry, he's not real and we didn't fuck up, he's a ghost, is he goes, no, wait, I don't die here. But then in about 10 minutes, he's going to talk to another character and they're going to be like, yeah, hey, buddy, I think you're dead. And he's going to be like, what the heck? Yeah,
it doesn't work. Yeah.
They're also going to insist that you can take a physical object off of a ghost and then it just stays real, even if the ghost despawns.
Yeah, that's the one that pisses me off. Like, the rest of it's like, sure, fuck it. Maybe he died and was the most stoned he'd ever been in his life, so he doesn't remember whether he is or is not a ghost. He's just permanently a high ghost. Man, that sounds awesome. No, but it's the fact that he has an ID card that's going to be taken and will be a real ID card that can be interacted with. Horrible. Annoying. So yeah, Richard Ramirez kills the ghost, I guess. And we cut to Nurse Rita listening to some more licensed music. I'm glad you didn't even note down what the song is, because it doesn't matter. It's literally just here to be like, check it out, we have licensed music from the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Cool. She hears some jingling keys, and who knows what that is. It's Mr. Jingles. He shows up, he's here now. And yeah, he's a big man with a knife, which, like, is concerning.
And damn, well, that's fair. Maybe we shouldn't have told Brooke she was crazy like 10 minutes ago about there being Mr. Jingles. Like, imagine someone tells you, hey, I think this very specific killer that has this very specific characteristic is here, and I did see him. And you're all like, fuck you, you're stupid, you didn't, you're dumb. And then you hear the jingling, and your first response isn't, oh, shit, that person was right. It's, wonder what that is. What can that be?
Egg on my face. Run. Yeah. No.
That's the end of that scene, by the way. We're not, like, missing a part. She just sees that it's Mr. Jingles with a knife, and then it cuts away, which is, like, one of the worst things that you can do in a horror movie. Especially with the way that that's going to rectify itself. Nothing says I am making a good horror property by being, like, I had a run-in with a killer. Oh, well, what happened? Don't worry about it. We're doing a new scene now. Yeah. And again, we cut away from
that. I handled it. What the fuck do you mean you handled it? I handled it. Yeah. What do you mean you handled it? I handled it.
Don't worry.
I jingled my keys, and then I threw them really far, and he had to chase them because that's how his mechanics work. I know how his mechanics work, so I cheesed the boss fight. Yeah. I parried him. Elsewhere.
Take off the keys and only throw them two at a time. You get way more throws.
True. Yeah, that's why you have to pick up the key ring really early in the run. That way you make sure you have enough keys accumulated by the time you encounter him. Yeah.
No, yeah. Good strats, yeah.
That's how you cheese Mr. Jingles. So going back to Brooke being gaslit, Brooke is still running away from Richard Ramirez, who has been fighting a ghost for the last 5 minutes. And she tries the phone again and it does not work. And then she, like, runs into parentheses physically Montana, and she's like, Montana, Richard Ramirez is here. The guy who tried to kill me, Richard Ramirez. And Montana's like, are you still fucking on that shit again? And then we cut away from them immediately. And we're back in the woods again, back with Jonas and Richard Ramirez. And Richard Ramirez has disemboweled and also slit the throat of Jonas. But then Jonas, like, appears again. And Ramirez is like, what the heck? And tackles him again. If I was a serial killer and I killed somebody and then that same person appeared in front of me 35 seconds later, not dead and fully fine again, I'd be like, okay, well, time to reevaluate what's going on. Because clearly that's not a person.
Or if you really like killing, you might be like, jackpot. Right? I'm not going to kill nobody else ever again. I'm just going to kill this one guy over and over. Whenever I get bloodthirst, I just go handle this guy and then I call it a day.
Yeah.
I'm
going
to be a functioning member of society again.
I think that is quite literally a plot of like three of the seasons of the show that have ghosts in it. It's like, oh, do you have a guy who really loves killing? Well, set him up with these ghosts who can get killed because then they'll never be bored. Like, that's literally, I'm pretty sure, a plot point in most of these seasons.
It's in Cube 2 Hypercube, for God's sake, which is a terrible horror movie, but it's there, where one guy can't stop eating another guy, and it's totally weird, but yeah.
Romance is dead.
I mean, this is the character Slayer in Guilty Gear, where he met a woman who's just, like, fucked up in the universe's code so he can suck her blood forever, and they're great. Like, that's it. It's so dumb. So Richard Ramirez stabs this fella again. He's like, fuck it, I'll kill you twice, I guess. This is where we get the worst terror radius effect I've ever heard in my life. Of whenever Richard Ramirez is getting nasty on screen, it just goes, Satan.
And it's not him saying it, because if it was him, it would be really fucking funny. If he was like killing somebody and he was like, Satan. But it's not. It's like an ADR of like other people's voices going, Satan. Like weird ASMR. And I'm like, what are we, is this diegetic? Like, is this happening in the scene? Or is like, does he like bring like a little pocket like tape player with this recorded? Like, what is happening? What are we supposed to take away from this? Is his meter full? Is he about to do his ultimate? Like, what is happening? Like, why is this noise happening?
It feels like maybe for later events, they're trying to claim that he's only doing this because of the satanic influence so that perhaps we can redeem him later.
Or perhaps make his character worse.
redeem him in defeat, baby.
Yeah.
Old Sugar Conroy pipeline.
Really ahead of its time. Really ahead of its time. Damn. Maybe the show is good. Richard Ramirez summons his stand Satan and kills Jonas again. And then that's when he equips the ghost item from Jonas's neck, which is his ID that says that he was a camp counselor in 1970. And this is really, like, this is probably where we're going to have to end it for today, because there's still quite a bit of episode left. But, like, this is going to, for some reason, really tilt Richard Ramirez. And he's going to, like, start tweaking about it. As if that guy not dying wasn't enough, like, to tell him, hey, something's a bit off. He's like, this thing says that he was from 1970, but he's like a kid or whatever. This is fucked up. I'm going to be really upset about this. And I need answers. I'm Richard Ramirez, and I need answers about this ID.
That's really the confusing part. Yeah, it really does feel like Richard Ramirez was here on his main quest line of killing Brooke. And then he just ran into some random ghost who was like, I have a mystery. And he's like, fuck, guess I'm doing this.
Much like Mr. Jingles, it turns out that all you need to like distract a serial killer is just like a little side quest, like a little fetch quest that they have to do. Yeah. I mean, he's gotten like two really bad blunt force traumas to the head over the last 24 hours. Yeah. So maybe he's really upset.
And when he was attacking Brooke earlier, he's like, where's the jewelry and the gems? Maybe he was on a quest from a dragon and he just needed to get some, he needed to get some gems. Maybe he's just a misunderstood. I can't do that because he's a real man. See, this is where the problem comes in, right? It's like, if this wasn't a real man, I could have a great time just riffing on how this bitch wants dragon gems. But it's a real guy and he killed people for real. So it can't be funny, you piece of shit. I can't. Ah. God. Why do they do this?
Can't wait for later. But yeah.
Yo, I have to tell you, listeners, like, I know that, like, we've made this three parts, but I need you to know it's because the last part of this episode, the one that we're going to talk about next week, has all of the best parts of this episode in it.
Yeah, this is the choice
that are going to
take
a long time to talk about, because when they happen, you're going to be like, you guys are making that up. And we're going to be like, no, we're not. It's in the show. It happened, I promise.
After 8 seasons, I still bet on that, yeah. It's just sort of like, somehow it can't be true, and somehow
because
it is.
Something is going to happen at the end of this episode, or towards the end of this episode, that even though I've seen this season, I physically, out loud, said, what? When it happened. What? We made Richard Ramirez do what?
Yeah, like, it... They're, like, clearly setting up some kind of Richard Ramirez's a little buddy helper guy situation, which is even crazier, especially because they have him do, like, weird internet guy shit. Mm-hmm.
He was a trailblazer. That's what they don't tell you about Richard Ramirez, is he was a trailblazer for the manosphere before anyone else was.
Yeah, didn't shower, wanted to see them puppies. Yeah. Show me them piggies.
Oh my God.
Well, till next time, dear listener, look forward to Richard Ramirez possibly saying something along the lines of, show me them piggies. See you next time.
Bye.